Tonight's show is dedicated to Leva Nishma Sima Yitta Bas Ovadja. Parshas Va'era is a turning point for the Jewish people. Parshas Shmois, we read, it's a very depressing parsha, at least the latter half of it. The Jewish people are suffering. They're under paroi. They're slaves. In slavery and in servitude. And finally, in this week's parsha, the tide turns. Now we're kind of going to have the upper hand. Now we kind of like sit back and enjoy and watch the Mitzrayim suffer. And 6 out of the 10 makas are in this week's parsha. So this is the time where we can kind of sit back and enjoy and reflect and say, oh, it's great to be Jewish. It's great not to be a Mitzri. We're winning, they're losing, and it's all fine. But the truth is, I believe strongly that in order to appreciate or to even understand both the Geula, the proper understanding of what it meant, the Geula, the redemption of Mitzrayim, we have to really understand what Geulas Mitzrayim was. And Parshas Va'era is the middle of a topic. If you open up Va'era not knowing Shmois, you'd be very confused. Va'era is a continuation of a storyline that started at the end of Parshas Shmois. So we're going to go a little backwards tonight. I hope to eventually get into Parshas Va'era. But to properly understand Parshas Va'era, you must go back and understand the end of Parshas Shmois. And as the story thickens, you'll see how Parshas Va'era really develops into what it is. We didn't have a chance to have a share on Parshas Shmois, which I wish we could have, because there's a lot of great things to talk about. But one of the things are, we're introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu. Parshas Shmois, we're introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu, and really in Parshas Va'era, we're more introduced to Aaron. And we're going to learn that there's an interesting relationship, a very respectful and important relationship that these two brothers had, who really didn't know each other. They were separated for most of their life. They first reunite when one's 80 and one's 83. You know, not exactly in the younger part of their life. But they reunite, and we'll see, as described by Midrashim and by Rishonim, they had a very, very interesting relationship, very respectful relationship that they had with each other. But we find in Parshas Shmois, we learn about Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the way the Torah describes him, as a shepherd. All our great leaders were all shepherds. And before we speak out, there's a reason for that. Because shepherds have a lot of free time. They have time to think. They go in the middle of the grass, and it's open, and it's free. Nothing's bogging them down. They can think, and they can have ideas. And that's why Kadosh Baruch Hu many times gives nevuah to Royim. It's a good job to be in. I'm not endorsing it today. I don't know what the pay is like today. But it's a good job for a person who wants to be able to think and connect what we call today's Baitidus and think about the world in Kadosh Baruch Hu. So we find about this Moshe Rabbeinu, who's a fugitive. He's a refugee. He's a fugitive. He's an illegal immigrant, Moshe Rabbeinu. Comes to a foreign town called Midian. And lo and behold, he finds a loving family. Yisrael takes him in. And Yisrael allows him to marry his daughter. And he's working for Yisrael. And life is very happy for Moshe Rabbeinu. He was thrilled. He has a family. He has two kids. He's giving up the old Mitzri life or whatever else, the headaches he had from Pyre. And he was living a very happy life at Midian. One day, Kadosh Baruch Hu pierced him in a burning bush. And all of a sudden, his life changes. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you're going to be the new, the salvation for the Jewish people is going to come through you. You got to leave Midian, go to Mitzrayim, and save the Jewish people. You know, so initially, Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, I'm not really that interested. Shepherd's working for me, I'm okay. And over time, there's this back and forth with Kadosh Baruch Hu. Again, it needs further discussion. There's a back and forth with Kadosh Baruch Hu. I can't be the leader. I can't do this. I can't. It's not for me, this and that. And ultimately, he gives in. What's interesting is, if you look in the Psukim, comes up later on. Moshe Rabbeinu, one of his tainus is that he's not a good speaker. So Rashi over there learns his tainus was that he stuttered. Moshe Rabbeinu stuttered. Right? That was the way the pasuk says the chvat peh. Aral Sva Simon, this week's parasha, is a different speech impediment. Well, we'll have to talk about the two different speech impediments that Moshe Rabbeinu had. But Moshe Rabbeinu talks about, I'm not a speaker. This is not my thing. I can't. I stutter. It's very hard for me. So Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem said, don't worry. You won't be the speaker. I'll be the speaker. We got it all worked out. So what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu comes back to his father-in-law. And he tells his father-in-law, and if you look at the psukim, it's fascinating. He never tells his father, you know who I just met in a burning bush? You know, today, if a person saw Kadosh Baruch Hu in a burning bush, it would be, you know, front page, it would be all over the place. He doesn't even tell his father-in-law what happened. All he tells his father-in-law is, I need to go back and help my brethren in Mitzrayim. So the Medrash asks, why didn't you tell your father-in-law, Kadosh Baruch Hu appeared to you in a bush? So the Medrash gives two pshatim. One pshat, the Medrash says, Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid Yisrael would think he's nuts. I'll lock him up. You come back, you tell your father, you should know what happened to me today. God appeared to me in a bush. Oh, thank you. And you're the father of my grandchildren, right? It wouldn't go well, says the Medrash. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know, let me not tell him what happened. Tell him I need to go back, and I got to go back. And Yisro gave him blessings. Go, enjoy. Lech l'shalom. We learn from the Gemara. The Gemara says that that's where you're supposed to greet a person when he leaves. We learn from Yisro, not lech bishalom, lech l'shalom. Beautiful story. Moshe Rabbeinu goes on his way, and he's ready to go and save Klal Yisro. In the middle, he has the whole issue with the Mila, and he has to, whatever that's about. And then finally, the pasuk starts at the end. This is where I want to pick up, where the story, I think, really gets more into understanding what happened, is now we're introduced not only to Aaron, but to not only to Moshe, but to Aaron. Pasuk tells us, "Vayomer Hashem al Aaron lech likras Moshe midvarech." Now again, remember, Aaron was living in Mitzrayim. Moshe was living in Midian. Not exactly near each other. They didn't really know each other. As far as I know, there's no way that they knew each other. Unless there was a Nevuah that the Torah doesn't tell us about. Hashem tells Aaron one day, Lech likras Moshe midbarech. Go to the desert and greet your brother that you never knew, named Moshe. And he goes. There's an unbelievable line that Rabbi Aaron Cutler himself, during World War II, wasn't sure where to go. He was living in Europe, and he knew he was going to leave. So Shaila, should he go to Eretz Yisrael, or should he go to America? Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was urging him to go to America. So Rabbi Aaron Cutler said about himself this pasuk. It says in the Torah, Hashem said to Aaron, Lech likras Moshe, Hamid Barah, go to Moshe in the desert. So Rabbi Aaron Cutler said, that's me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's telling me, go to Moshe, or Moshe Feinstein in the desert. So Rabbi Aaron Cutler, that's how he decided to come to America. Amazing. He did a girl like girl, came up this pasuk, and he said, this pasuk's calling to me. It says in the pasuk that Aaron should go to where Moshe is in the desert. So that's it. Rabbi Aaron Cutler picked and came to America, and that's what we have. America was the Midbar, and now we have liquid here today in America. Unbelievable. Not from this pasuk. But the pasuk is interesting, because what does it say in the pasuk? Aaron goes to the Midbar. They meet each other. He kisses him. Who kisses who? So the Ramban writes that Aaron kissed Moshe. Says the Ramban, why? Because Moshe would have never kissed Aaron on his own. Why? Says the Ramban, because it's not respectful to be the one to give the kiss. You have to be the recipient. To give the kiss means you're showing some form of power and control. Therefore writes the Ramban, Moshe Rabbeinu had such an awe for his older brother. You have to remember, this is the Moshe Rabbeinu who was just told by HaKadosh Baruch himself, you're going to lead the Jewish people. And his brother that he never met before, he just knows he's 3 years older than him. When he comes to meet for the first time, says the Ramban, Moshe didn't feel comfortable kissing him. He waited for Aaron to kiss him, and he would not kiss Aaron, because it was disrespectful to kiss your older brother. That's the, we refer to Moshe as un of Mikolod, and that's one of the clear ideas of understanding what Moshe Rabbeinu is anivus. However, if it's interesting, if you look in other Rishonim, they learn that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Aaron, go greet Moshe, and Moshe Rabbeinu is going to be, you know, your new Rebbe. It's going to be Moshe Rabbeinu. And the pasuk says, Vayishak Loi, says the Rishonim, he kissed him like he kissed a Sefer Torah. That was the love that Aaron had for his brother, the respect and awe that he had, which again went both ways. Aaron respected Moshe, and Moshe respected Aaron. And therefore the Vayishak Loi was, says the Chizkuni, I believe, was a reflection of his respect and honor for Moshe Rabbeinu. That's why he kissed. Okay, so what happens further? The pasuk tells us, they have a little bit of a meeting, they catch up. Moshe tells Aaron everything that happened. And what's the next move? They go together to the Zikanim. What's the significance of going to the Zikanim? So the Ebenezer Ezra says on the, right away that the Zikanim are the Mayatzim of the generation. This is something that repeats itself all over Tanakh. If we discuss the role of Zikanim in society, in American society, this is lost today. American society is you're old, you're out. The younger is better. In Judaism, we don't believe that. We believe that the older are smarter, wiser, more experienced. They understand things better. So the Ebenezer Ezra says that that's why they went to this Canaan. Because they're the ones who create the Eitzes. They're the Baal Eitz of the generation. And people were going to Reb Shteinman when he was over 100 years old. They were going to ask him questions. You tell that to a non-Jew, they'll think you're nuts. Would you ever go to a doctor who's 103 years old and ask him to perform a surgery on you? You gotta be crazy. 103 years old. He probably has these old tools in his office. Nothing's computerized. His hands are shaking. You don't want to go near him. Yet when it comes to, you know, we go to those that are older because they're more knowledgeable. They've been around. They see. So they go to this Canaan to get this Canaan. You have to remember, till now, there's been no talk about any Geula, no talk about a Yeshua, just depression, suffering and pain of the Jewish people. So they go to this Canaan and they get them on board. And Aaron starts to talk. And Aaron starts to tell them all the things that happened. And Aaron starts to perform all the miracles. Aaron? Shouldn't have Moshe been doing all this? Aaron is just repeating what Moshe said. So instead of getting it from a shlich, let Moshe Rabbeinu talk. Says the Medrash, Moshe Rabbeinu felt he has no right to talk in the presence of his older brother. Now, again, Moshe was the one who told it initially. Aaron heard it secondhand.
Says the Medrash, Moshe had such a respect for his Achiv HaGadol that he felt he has no right to give over what was told to him directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Zakenim. It has to come from Aaron. The truth is, another Rishonim, it's Mavur, that Moshe Rabbeinu knew from the get-go, his job isn't to talk. Talking is always going to be Aaron. Anytime there's a discussion, where there's a proclamation, a declaration, that's always going to be Aaron. So that's why it could be why he felt it's going to be Aaron's job. Moshe Rabbeinu was never much of the talker. It was really going to be the job of Aaron. So what happens? That's it. They believe him. The nation is sold. They're convinced Moshe Rabbeinu is going to take them out of Mitzrayim. This is it. And they're excited and everything's great, terrific. Everyone's happy about the future. They believe. The Medrash says, what's the lashon of vayamein? To believe. Emunah. What does it mean, emunah? So the Medrash says that Yaakov Avinu taught his children that there's going to come a time when you're going to go into Galus, and there's going to come a time when you're going to be set free. And there's going to be a person who's going to come and perform miracles. X and Y miracles is a raya that he's the right leader. And if it's not those miracles, don't believe him. Which is a problem we occur in history. When Klal Yisrael suffers, there's always someone who comes along and decides he's the next Mashiach. He's the next Yeshua. And sometimes we fall for it, and sometimes we don't go for it. Right? Yoshka, Shabtai Tzvi, these movements at time were very popular. So Yaakov Avinu told his children, listen guys, this is the rules. If he comes and does this and this and this, Moifis, believe him. Otherwise, don't believe him. So that's the pasuk. Vayamein, they believed him. They said, this is what we were told. Yaakov taught us, and we taught our children that when the guy comes and does X and Y, because we have to remember, who ever heard of a Moshe Rabbeinu? He didn't exist. He was a foreigner from Midian. Can you imagine all the people that are working all day long? All of a sudden, a guy comes, he had a nice, easy life. He comes and says, I'm going to let you all free. Who are you? We never met you before. So he had to prove himself, says the pasuk. The people trusted him and they believed him and they were convinced that Moshe Rabbeinu was ultimately going to lead them to the Geula.
Isn't Sarah?
Yeah, she was from the previous generation, so to say. She was there, but again, think about it just in our perspective. We would never believe a person who's not suffering like we are telling us it's over. Come on. You're really telling me? There's no reason to believe you. So the people believe him. So the question is, why did Aaron have to perform the Oseis? Why did Aaron perform the miracles? Let Moshe Rabbeinu do it. So I believe could be the pshat is that Aaron was a recognizable person. The people knew Aaron. They didn't know Moshe Rabbeinu. They wanted someone who the people say, he's one of ours. We know him. We're familiar with him. He's living with us in Mitzrayim, and he's going to perform the miracles. We're going to believe it. If Moshe Rabbeinu, an outsider, comes and starts doing these things, I believe that people would be more skeptical. And that's why I think Aaron did it instead of Moshe. But now this is really the storyline really thickens, I think. What happens now? They now have their first meeting with Moshe and Paray about letting them go. So the Rashi asks, it says, Moshe and Aaron, where were the Zakenim? They were so gung-ho, they were so excited, why didn't they come to the meeting? So Rashi quotes a Medrash. The Medrash says they were gung-ho until they actually got there. And on the way, each one dropped out slowly, each Zakein dropped out and said, I'm not going, I'm not interested, too scary, I'm afraid to go. And again, putting it in perspective, you can't really blame them. They were actually feeling this avdus under Paro. Paro was this, can you imagine the Havdil Jews, marching out of the ghetto saying, okay, we're going to go meet Hitler. No Jew in their right mind would think of doing such a thing. This was the person you feared, you had this unbelievable year and pachad from, and I'm going to march into his palace and start telling him what we're doing. So there's Canaan, so Moshe, and even Aaron. Again, we have to remember, Aaron was from Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi never worked in Mitzrayim. So it was a different attitude. As opposed to some of this kingdom that worked, they were part of it. For them to just walk into their biggest fear in the world is Paray, just to walk into his office and say, I'm telling you, Paray, things are changing, we're leaving. It's very hard. That's the way the Medrash. Rashi says it was a tain on them, and they got somewhat punished. When it came to Harsina, they lost a little bit of their rank, except Sechom as Akasha. But that's the way that Rashi learns. There's another Medrash, which I can't say I understand. The Medrash says that when they walked into the palace, they were amazed by what they saw. What they saw in each corner were Jews suffering. This group was being pained for something they did wrong, and in that corner, this group, they said to themselves, I can't stand here. Even though by me being here, I'm going to lead to the Yeshua, I'd rather not see other Jews suffer. I'm going to go back to working all day long. So
a very difficult medrash to understand. You would have thought, you know, short-term, long-term type idea. He says, listen, you got to stand in Paro's office for an hour, but by then, all Klai Yisrael will be free. But the way the medrash says it is that the Zkenim said, we can't stand here in Paro's office watching our Jews suffer for, you know, all the people that were doing things wrong that Paro took them into his prisons, and they were watching them. They saw it. The Zkenim couldn't handle it, so therefore they left. So if you say it like that, then it's not as a taina, so to say, on them, and more that they just couldn't stomach seeing Jews suffer. So what happens? They come to Paro, and Moshe Rabbeinu gives him his story over there, and Paro rejects it without even thinking twice. He basically tells him, I don't know who Hashem is, I don't know who Jews are, nothing to talk about, get out of here, I'm done with you, don't waste my time. So you can imagine, Moshe Rabbeinu was a little depressed. This was his first job. His first job was to go to Paro and tell Paro we're sending the Jewish people. Till now, everything went great. He saw the Aaron was on board, the Zakenim were on board, the Jewish people, everything was great. Now he hits his first roadblock, he hits Paro. What happens now? So Paro tells him, get out of here. I don't want to hear anything from you. But Yemi Paro, who's Hashem? I don't want to hear about it. The Medrash makes it even more dramatic. The Medrash says this was a day that Paro was celebrating. He was celebrating the day that it was one of his days that he became a king, reliving his original kingship. And kings from all over the world were there. It was a big deal. And all of a sudden, this Moshe Rabbeinu shows up and says, you know, we're leaving. It was a busha to Paro and to his whole party. Paro is obviously very upset. And we know the way the story goes, and this is really what happens. So what the pasuk tells us, what are you doing? He tells him, go back to your jobs. Rashi says over here, what does he mean? He doesn't mean go back to being an Eved, because Moshe and Aaron were never Avodim. Can you imagine Aaron just walked out of Mitzrayim to the desert? It's the first time it hit me, this pasuk. Pasuk says Aaron walked into the desert to meet Moshe Rabbeinu. As in the whole country, the whole Jewish nation is Avodim. And Aaron just like walked out like a free man, just walked out of Mitzrayim and crossed the border and went into the Midbar. The answer was he was part of Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi had freedom. They had rights, and they were not Avodim, and he had enough rights that he could march out of Mitzrayim and walk into the Midbar. He met his brother. So Paro tells him, go back to your work. Why? He didn't mean go back to back-breaking work. He meant go back to whatever you're doing for your job. Because Shevet Levi never worked for Paro. So the question is, why did Shevet Levi never work for Paro? So there's two pshatim brought down in the Ramban. The Ramban writes, because how did the whole Avdus start? The whole Avdus started with a scheme. Paro, as we mentioned Sunday morning, and needs more discussion, Paro knew that he was not able to change an entire society overnight. Just to wake up one day and say, okay, all the Jews, you're going to be second-class citizens, you're all going to work for us, that would never go. The Ramban says in Parashat Shmos that there would be an uproar. The Mitzrayim would revolt if Paro pulled such a thing. So he did it very slowly. So what did he do? He told the Jews, we're all going to be working. You, me, Mitzrayim, dignitaries, we're all going to be working. And they bought it. They all started working. And slowly, slowly, it was just the Jews left working. Says the Ramban, Shevet Levi never fell for it. Shevet Levi says, this sounds very, very schemey. This doesn't make sense. We're not buying into it. We're not opting in. So they never opted in. They never had to work. That's one of the Ramban's pshat. This is the famous pshat that most people know. But there's another Ramban, which is unbelievable. The Ramban writes that every culture has those that don't work in the regular job field. What they do is they do what we call academia. They're there to be able to educate and to rule on various decisions that are relevant to the society. Says the Ramban, Paro did the same thing with the Jews. He said, you're a culture. You need to have your rabbis. You need to have those people. So he said, Shevet Levi, you guys are the ones who learn Torah. We're not going to bother you. We're going to let you stay and have you do your thing so the Jewish people can have their people to ask Shilas to. Paro. When you think of Paro, this evil guy, he was an evil person, but he worked with some form of logic. His logic was every society has what he calls the Meir Hara of their society. Everyone needs it. So the Jews also got it. Therefore, he left Shevet Levi free to be able to study Torah, to have yeshivas, to be able to learn, to be able to do what they need to do. As I said, the Ramban. The Chizkuni says it's slightly different. The Chizkuni says that Paro didn't want Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi was B'nai Torah. He said, what am I going to do with these guys? They don't know how to build buildings. They've been learning all day long. What am I going to do with these guys? Put them in the field. What are they going to do? They don't know what to do. Not that I don't want to say they're useless, but the Chizkuni writes that they didn't serve a purpose for Paro. How much can he help them? You know, you take a bunch of yeshiva guys and tell them, go build a building. What are they going to do with a building? They'll explain to you how to build a sukkah in the building. Maybe we'll tell you about Daif and Akuma and Karach. They'll tell you, oh, a sukkah, but they're not going to tell you how to build a house. Says the Chizkuni, he didn't bother with them. It wasn't worth it.
Therefore, Shevet Levi was never included in the original Hashtabas. As I zokt the Chizkuni. So, Lamaisa, we know that Shevet Levi didn't work. So he tells him, go back home, leave me alone. Not only that, says Pare, I'm going to make it even harder for the Jewish people. I'm not going to give them Tevin anymore. So the obvious question you have to ask yourself is, what was Pare gaining by this? If Pare was a businessman, this was a very bad business decision. You're going to make it harder to produce. So you want to produce, you want to build, you want to get things done, why are you making it harder for your workers? They're just going to produce less because there's no straw. So says Reb Itzlo Volozhin, Chaim Volozhin's son, he says, no, Pare had a very smart idea. Pare knew, how do I break the achdus of the Jewish people? Till now, the Jewish people were working together and there was some form of unity. When you tell the Jews, you each have to find your own straw. So now, when two Jews go out to the street and they find straw, what's going to happen? They're going to fight over it. I need to bring my... No, I need it. It's going to break the achdus that the Jewish people had. Says Reb Itzlo Volozhin, that is exactly what Pare wanted to do. He didn't care about productivity. He didn't care if I build another building, not another building. He didn't care. He wanted to break the Jewish people at one of the most important points that we have. He wanted to break it that we won't have any achdus. And it makes a lot of sense. If we're both fighting for the same piece of straw, something's going to happen. We're going to push each other. We're going to hit each other. Right? The Mishnah tells us in Yuma, running up the ramp in the base of Mikdash, there were fights. Kosher gets something like this. We're going to fight over it. We're going to lose out on our entire level of achdus. Therefore, writes, says Reb Itzlo Volozhin, that was Pare's idea. Pare's idea was to break the unity. Although it might not have made so much sense on a financial point, but it was very good for Pare to break the morality of the Jewish people. And it's clear through learning Pasha Shmoitz, that was one of Pare's major agendas. It wasn't just to break the Jewish people physically, was to break them emotionally, was to ruin a lot of their spiritual growth, a lot of their achdus, any hope, anything like that, was a big part of what Pare wanted to do. And one of the ways one does this is by appointing Jewish people to guard Jewish people. And this was something that Hitler did as well, and it's a very, very powerful tool when you want to break people's morale by having them be controlled by other Jews. It's very depressing for another person to see that he's being dominated by a fellow Jew. And Pare did that also. Pare did that and Hitler did that. And Nebuch, those people who did that for Hitler, they had to do some very dirty work. And they were convinced, the Juderin, they were convinced this was going to be their ticket to survival. History shows that's not true. Most of those Jews that were Juderin got killed by the Nazis also. They did not live. They thought they'd live because they would do whatever Hitler asks and they would do all the dirty work and they would make the Jews' lives harder. It wasn't true. Most of them did not live. They got killed also with the rest of them. But Pare did the same tactic. Pare decided he was going to have Jews work for other Jews. However, it didn't work so well for Pare. As the Pasuk tells us, the Shtarei B'nai Yisrael, they didn't give in to Pare. And not only that, they actually took the brunt of the beatings. They took it for the Jewish people, Rashi says. When they came back to Pare, Pare said, why don't you have more buildings? They said, listen, Pare, don't give us any straw. What do you want us to do? And they got clapped. They got hit. Rashi says, the schus, that they got all those hits, they got to be on the Sanhedrin. So the obvious question you have to ask yourself is, to be on Sanhedrin, you have to be holding a Kol Torah Kula. So these guys must have been very special people. But how do you know Kol Torah Kula? Because you were hit by, you took the beatings for the people. So I saw Reb Shteinman. Tzatzal asks this kasha. But I think you see from here something very important. To be a Jewish judge, to be on Sanhedrin, it's not enough that you know a lot of Torah. You have to be sensitive to the people. You have to be cure enough about the people that you come in contact with that you're willing to take a beating for them. Then you can start judging people. If you're not enough mu'urav and mabriyas, if you're not enough understanding the people, feel for the people, if you feel that you're on a higher level, then you can't be one of the judges in Klal Yisrael. You have to understand people, feel for people, know what they're going through. If you think you're better than them, then you're not going to be a very successful judge in Klal Yisrael. And therefore, that's why they were taka zeiche to be the Sanhedrin, because they had this sensitivity, this feeling of understanding what another Jew is going through. So what happens? So these Shoitri Yisrael were good people. There's only one problem. There's a pasuk that needs a little explanation. Pasuk says, at the end of Parashat Shmos, pasuk says, Vayifku es Moshe ves Aaron. The Shoitri B'nei Yisrael, pasuk before that was talking about Shoitri B'nei Yisrael, it says they met Moshe and Aaron, and they yelled and screamed at Moshe and Aaron. So you have to ask yourself, what? These great leaders are going to yell and scream at Moshe and Aaron? So Rashi learns a big chiddush over here. Rashi learns these people were not the Shoitri B'nei Yisrael. They were actually the troublemakers of Klal Yisrael. Why does Rashi learn this way? It's Loshitasai. Since Rashi just got finished telling us that that these people were great people, they can't be to turn around and start yelling at Moshe Rabbeinu. It must be with other people, and they were complaining about Moshe Rabbeinu. So what happens now? This is really where Parshas Vayera starts. Moshe Rabbeinu is very fatayin at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, Hashem, what do you want from me?
I don't understand. You told me it's all going to be simple. You go there, do this, do this. I did all this, and I'm getting terrible backlash. Pari's getting mad at me. The Jewish people are getting mad at me. And I made things worse. What's going on over here? Frekta Ramban, I don't think Moshe Rabbeinu is so surprised. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you it's not going to be easy. He told you I'm going to be mechabed as Lev Pari. What are you so surprised by? HaKadosh Baruch Hu dropped hints. Hints. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it openly. Two places, Hashem said, I am going to make Pari's heart hard. So why are you so surprised, Moshe Rabbeinu? So Ramban says, yeah, Moshe Rabbeinu knew that, but he figured it will be like slowly, a little bit slowly, slowly. Not that it's going to go backwards. He didn't think it's going to get worse. He figured it will go. You know, Pari will say, okay, I hear where you're coming from. Let's have a meeting next week and we'll talk about it. But not that it's going to get so much worse. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't understand. But many Mepharshim are very troubled by this, that Moshe Rabbeinu uses some very harsh, some very strong words with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And not only that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives it back to him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, what happens? In the end of Perek A, he tells him, I don't understand what you want. Why are you making it so bad for them? Why did you send me? That's the end of Perek A. Perek Vav starts up. Hashem answers Moshe back. Don't worry, you'll see it's all going to work out. So Yaakov Kamenetsky points out, he says, this is one of the rayas that whoever made the prokim made it incorrectly. Perek Vav means it's a new topic. We're in the middle of a conversation. Moshe is saying, Hashem's responding. You shouldn't make a new parak over here. Yaakov writes in Emes Yaakov. He thinks this is a big kasha on whoever made the parakim. It's out of order. This shouldn't be a new parak. The new parak should start in a couple of psukim. We're in the middle of a topic over here. We're in the middle of a conversation. Hashem is saying, answering back to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's not a place to make an interruption. You have to continue the statement. So what's Hashem's answer? Hashem says, listen, Atas Sirah. You'll see. Says Rashi, yeah, you'll see this, but you're not going to see anything else. You're not going to see when we divide and we conquer the Sayyid Umas and Eretz Yisrael. That you're not going to see. Why, says Rashi? Because you're not like the others. The others never had these kashas. Why? How? What? They were never bothered. They did exactly what I told them. You're asking me kashas. So Rashi says, what's his punishment? You, Hirarta Almidoisai. You're starting to ask questions on the way I function, the way I do things. You're not like Avram. You're not like Yitzchak. Therefore, you're not going to see the Malchei Shivas Umois like your father, Keshaviyam La'arbetz, when I bring them into Eretz Yisrael. So I'm a first mask. One second. It sounds like from this Pasuk that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go into Eretz Yisrael was because of this story. Everyone knows that's not true. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go into Eretz Yisrael because of the story of Mei Meriva. So which one is it? Was he punished already over here? Was it not till Mei Meriva? So one shot they say is none of this was a punishment, but this wasn't locked in. This Moshe Rabbeinu, with all his tefillos, could have undone. Once Mei Meriva happened, then he was stuck. Then all the tefillos in the world, Vaschan and all the tefillos, he couldn't get out. And Moshe Sternberg comes up with a gevaldik achap. He says, no. Kosh Baruch Hu is zinging it into Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu was coming to Kosh Baruch Hu with a taina. He's saying, Kosh Baruch Hu, listen, I know that you have cheshbonos, but I'm telling you now, the morale of the people is very low. You got to do like a major miracle to psych people up. You got to do like, you know, make a makkah happen right now. The people need that. They're not enough of a believer just to hear that it's going to happen. You got to make nisim gluim. You got to make major things happen. That was his time at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says back to him, really? So what happened when we got to Mei Meriva? When we got to Mei Meriva, you told me that you're going to hit the rock. Why? Because you thought talking to a rock is too big of a miracle. We like to keep things in the normal world. Hitting a rock, it's a miracle, but not as a miracle of speaking to a rock. So Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, l'shitosai, you can't have it both ways. What do you want? Do you want me to perform open miracles? Or do you want me to perform the medium miracles? You can't have it both ways. Therefore, says after this story, now Mei Meriva, he had a big taina. So the two stories go together. So learns Rav Moshe Sternberg. Says Reb Schwab, do you know what the taina of Moshe Rabbeinu was? The taina of Moshe Rabbeinu was he didn't have patience. Because Baruch was telling him, listen, you have to understand the way I work. The way Klai Yisrael works, nothing is... Quick. You have to have patience. It takes time. It's not going to be solved overnight. We're not going to fix the problem in a minute. Slow. We'll get there. You have to have patience. Says Reb Schwab, that's why Hashem says, Rashi doesn't say, this is why you're not going into Eretz Yisrael. He says, you're not going to see the Malchei Shiva's Umois. Because that took 7 years. It took 7 years to do Kibush Aretz. Hashem was saying, Moshe Rabbeinu, you don't have the patience for 7 years. You can't sit down and watch over time how it's going to go slowly and slowly. You need to have patience. Because Baruch was telling him, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu, slow down. If you want to make it as a leader and you want to see Klal Yisrael's growth, you have to learn that it goes slow. Says Reb Schwab, we find that by Noach. It says in the Noach, Noach was very patient. Noach waited to send out the next bird, and he waited. Noach had a lot of patience. Says Reb Schwab, if you want to see how Kosh Baruch Hu works, you have to have patience. And he said that was the taina on Moshe Rabbeinu.
Ebel Yibarach Finkel points out, if you look up the Gemara that Rashi quotes, the Gemara says slightly different. The Gemara said that you're not like your forefathers. Why? Because Avraham Avinu, although he was so wanted a place to bury his wife, he had patience until everything worked out with the Amar Samachpel. Says Rebbe Yehuda Baruch Finkel, it's beautiful. That's the exact same midah. What's HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling him? Listen, learn from your avos. Have patience. Avraham Avinu also knew he had to bury his wife, and he wanted to bury his wife as soon as he can. But you have to realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes slow. You'll get it when it works out, and when things go the way they need to be. Avraham Avinu had this idea. And that's all the examples they give him, right? Kibitzak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, Kibitzak the Karel Chalazara. Can you imagine Avraham Avinu saying, where's my babies? Where's my kids? Where's my kids? Every day. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where's my kids? Avraham Avinu knew. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it's going to happen, it's going to take time. It won't be tomorrow. It won't be next week. It won't be next month. Things take time. Therefore, says Reb Schwab, that was the lesson that Moshe Rabbeinu had to learn. He had to learn that it's going to take time for everything to happen the way it's supposed to. Rabbi Fran writes in his Sefer a slightly different pshat, which is very, very important. He says, why was Hashem so upset at what Moshe Rabbeinu said? Moshe Rabbeinu says a lot of stronger things later on in Chumash, by the Chet Egel, by Miraglim. He always uses Shtak L'Shenis to defend the Jewish people. Why over here? Says Rabbi Fran, there's one word he said over here which was not right. He used the word ra'ah. He said, why are you doing bad? Says Rabbi Fran, that was his mistake. Whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is not bad. We don't understand it. It doesn't make sense to us. But you shouldn't call it bad. Bad is already deciding that this is evil. It's not evil. You don't understand it. That was the big mistake Moshe Rabbeinu made. Was referring to what happened as harayasa, bad. Don't call it bad. Say you don't understand it. Say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, listen, what's going on over this? Was the way it was supposed to happen. But calling it ra'ah, says Rabbi Fran, that was the mistake that Moshe Rabbeinu made. We don't have the right, nor should we, refer to things in a negative way. We can say we don't understand it. But to call it ra'ah is not correct. The Klausenberger Rebbe had a gewaltig pshat over here. The Klausenberger Rebbe said that Moshe Rabbeinu's tanya to HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, he said, lo maharesa lo'om hazeh, to this nation. Said the Klausenberger Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, let's go back in history. What was this klala about working in Mitzrayim? Who was it given to? It was given to Avraham Avinu, that his children, Avraham Avinu had a lot of other children besides the Jewish people. He had a whole Yishmael and Esav. Why aren't the Yishmaelim suffering in Mitzrayim? Why is it not spread around amongst all of Avraham Avinu's Enochloch? That's what he was saying to him. Lo mahiresa lo am hazeh. Why this Jewish people suffering so much? Let's spread the wealth. Let everyone suffer. Okay, the Jewish people were here for 210. Okay, let's take them out. And now we're going to move in the next one. The Yishmaelim. We'll do a stint in the Mitzrayim. We'll pull Yishmaelim out. We'll bring in Bnei Esav. Why is it like that? Why is this nation, lo am hazeh, suffering? And this is really a very fair kasha. Why were the only Jewish people? We're one chelik of Bnei Avraham Avinu. Why only us? So it's interesting, the Mefarshim ask, why did Amalek wait to come to attack us until we left Mitzrayim? So one of the pshatim they say is Amalek was no fool. Amalek knew that he was also from Enochloch from Avraham Avinu. And he knew if the Jewish people are not going to put in their time in Mitzrayim, someone else is going to have to make up for that time for Avraham Avinu's family. And Amalek knew it was going to be him. So he said, let the Jewish people finish their time in Mitzrayim. And when they finish Mitzrayim, then I'm going to attack them. So Amalek also had this cheshbon of we should distribute the amount of suffering in Mitzrayim, not only to the Jewish descendants of Avraham Avinu, but to all of Avraham Avinu's descendants. Yishmael should take a share, and Esav should take a share, and everyone should take a share. Says the Klausenberger Rebbe, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu's tanya was. Harei Salam Azev, you're not sharing with these people. The Jews already put in enough time. Share it with everyone else. Make everyone else come. That's the way the Klausenberger Rebbe learned the tanya of Loma Harei Salam Azev. So now we open this week's parsha. This week's parsha is the middle of a conversation. We're up to now with the part where HaKadosh Baruch Hu blasts Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the rebuke of Moshe Rabbeinu's drasha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where Hashem gives it to Moshe Rabbeinu. And he lets him have it very thick. He gives him the ganze drasha. He said, let me explain to you how things work over here, Moshe Rabbeinu. He said, listen, I am Hashem and I appear to your forefathers and I'm going to do this. And he gives him the whole drasha and he tells him, listen, go back. Go back and tell the Jewish people it's going to be, you know, it's going to be great. It's going to be amazing. Right? Sounds like a political campaign. Go and tell the Jewish people I'm going to take them out and don't worry. And we're going to, a whole drush that we all know from the Haggadah. And he basically pumps up Moshe Rabbeinu to go back. Although Moshe at this point is probably very depressed. Go back and pump up the greatness. It's going to be huge. It's going to be amazing. He throws in a pasuk. Hashem Baruch Hu tells him a pasuk over. He tells him that Eretz Yisrael, which I gave to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, v'nasati oisel lechem moirasha. I gave it to you as a moirasha. So Rabbeinu Bechaya points out, it doesn't say I gave it to you as a Yerusha. So I gave it to you as a Mayrusha. Why? Says Rabbeinu Bechaya, Mayrusha means I gave it to something to be inherited to. meaning it should be passed down as an inheritance, as opposed to be called a Yerusha. Why? Because this generation never stepped foot into Eretz Yisrael. It's not true. Moirasha means it's going to be passed down, because their children will go into Eretz Yisrael. But this immediate generation, the Holchei Midbar, they never went into Eretz Yisrael. So he was saying it's a Moirasha. It should be passed down to the next generation. Says the Balaturim, we find the same thing by Torah. The Pasuk says, Torah tziva lanu Moshe, Moirasha. Because Torah is not just for one generation. Torah is not just we're concerned about our own Torah, it's passed down. We have to be concerned about the next generation's Torah. How are our children going to learn Torah? How are the grandchildren going to learn Torah? It's not enough to be concerned about us. It's Torah for me and me to worry about only. No, it's a Mayrasha. The Baal Turim says that we find by Eretz Yisrael, the Torah calls Eretz Yisrael a Mayrasha, and we find that the Torah calls Torah a Mayrasha. Says the Baal Turim, our chances to live in Eretz Yisrael is totally in our Mayrasha of Torah. If we keep Torah and mitzvahs, then we'll get Eretz Yisrael. Says the Baal Turim, the two things go hand in hand. We also find that the Gemara in Pesachim says by Torah, Al Tikri Mayrasha Elamu Urasa, that we're married to the Torah. So Moshe Sternbach suggests that maybe same thing with Eretz Yisrael. It's also supposed to be called a Ma'arasa. There's a special relationship. We're married to Eretz Yisrael. We have an Erison. We have a relationship with Eretz Yisrael. It's not just a foreign concept. We're supposed to feel connected to it, just like we find it by the Torah. That's what the Mefarshim point out. So now Moshe Rabbeinu was on high over here. He just got pumped up about, you know, convincing the Jewish people. And right away the Pasuk tells him, "Vayidaber Moshe kenei b'nei Yisrael, v'lo yishomu el Moshe." They were not buying what he was selling. Not at all. V'lo yishomu el Moshe. They did not ask. They did not listen to Moshe Rabbeinu. Asks the Rashbam, why not? We just read before, "Vayamein ha'om." They were all gung-ho. They believed. Why the change? So Rashbam says, yeah, they believed until they saw what happened. The moment they saw that all this talk about freedom got them into trouble, it set them back and made their jobs harder, all of a sudden they were done. They're not buying into this anymore. This is not, I'm not subscribing anymore. You want to tell me it's going to be great, and okay, I can believe. Now that I saw all this greatness just means more work, they are not buying what he's selling. So it was like the Rashbam. The Kli Yakar learns a very interesting way of reading the Pasuk. The Pasuk is saying, they didn't listen to Moshe because they thought Moshe was ridiculous. Really, Moshe? How exactly are we going to get out of Mitzrayim? Explain this to me. Power is all powerful and all controlling, and we're just going to march out of Mitzrayim? So, v'lo yishomu el Moshe, they just thought the whole thing didn't make any sense. So, how do we end the pasuk? Mikoytze ruach amevei dekasha was. So, why didn't they express that to Moshe Rabbeinu? Says the Kli Yakar, they were so tired, they were so worn out, they didn't even want to bother talking. When a person is so tired and so dejected, they don't even care enough to express what they're feeling. But says the Kli Yakar, the two separate statements in the pasuk. They didn't listen to Moshe Rabbeinu because what Moshe Rabbeinu said made no sense. How exactly are we getting out of Mitzrayim? So why didn't they express it? That's because they were just so beaten down. They had no will to talk, to express anything. They just said, okay, Moshe Rabbeinu, you say your thing, we'll move on. And they had no interest in believing anything he had to say. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Nemes Liakov, suggests the following pshat. He's bothered with the kasha of the Rashbam. Why all of a sudden now are they no longer believers? He says, because it's an unbelievable chiddush from Yaakov Kamenetsky. He says that there was Megillos, scrolls written by Avraham Avinu that gave them hope, that talked about the ultimate Geula and the Yeshua, and they used to read these scrolls on Shabbos. And it would give them a chiyus, it would give them a fight to continue going for another week. Says Reb Yaakov, once Pari pulled the Tevin, they had to start working Shabbos. Now they had to start working Shabbos, they never had any time to read those scrolls, to read those books of Isaiah, those Svarim that gave them hope. So then all the hope was lost. At that point they gave up. That's how Rabbi Yaakov learns why now all of a sudden they don't want to hear it. Because what they were clinging to were those Megillas, he calls it, that they were reading, that discussed the future and Moshe Rabbeinu and all that great stuff. You know, they stopped reading it. They had no more time. When they came home at night, they were beat. The Gemara in Saita says they didn't even want to live with their spouses. They were so tired. They were so exhausted. So now the last thing they were doing at night was reading these Megillas. Shabbos, knew they were able to read them on Shabbos. But now that there was no Shabbos anymore, all hope was completely lost. That's the way Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky explains why the sudden change of heart from what we find in Parashas Shemot. Rashi learns that they just weren't interested. Like kiblu atanchumen, they weren't buying with power or something. It just wasn't going in. The Ramban says it slightly different. He says loy bavush leyamiru b'Hashem. Wasn't they doubted it? Rakshli hitu oizen ledvarof. They couldn't listen. They just couldn't get their ears to listen. They believed in theory that anything could happen. Hashem has all the powers in the world. But just because of the situation they were in, they couldn't imagine there ever being a Yeshua. When a person suffers for so long, for so many years, it's very hard. Again, if you would have asked someone in a concentration camp 3-4 years into a camp, you say, do you believe one day? They didn't believe. It's very hard to believe. You know, of course, because Baruch Hu wants the world. You know in theory. But practical, you're so beat, you're so worn out, it's very hard to use it l'maisa. The Arachayim HaKadosh says another, we'll call a whopper of a chiddush. He says, you know why they didn't listen to Moshe Rabbeinu? This is the Arachayim HaKadosh. He says, Ki letzat sheloi hayu b'nei Torah. They weren't b'nei Torah, they weren't learned people. If they would have been learned people, they would have been able to accept the words of Moshe Rabbeinu. How exactly are we supposed to understand this Arachayim HaKadosh? I believe what Arachayim HaKadosh is saying is that by learning Torah, we develop a whole new level of broadening our horizon, so to say. The impossible is very possible. Now, you could say that, I think, in a couple different ways, because that's the whole beauty of Torah. The beauty of Torah is we expand and we get creative and we see things beyond what they look like. You take a Mishnah and you cut it up into 100 pieces, you take a statement in a Gemara and you cut it up and you dissect it and you all of a sudden it's not as simple as it looks. You can think, as we call it, outside the box. So therefore, says Arachayim HaKadosh, they didn't have that. They weren't learned people. Therefore, they couldn't see beyond what was in front of them. Their heart couldn't be widened, says the Arachayim, and that's what they couldn't believe. So what happened? Because Baruch Hu tells Moshe, okay, so Moshe comes to the Bnei Yisrael, completely rejected. You know what Hashem says? Okay, great. Next step, sell it to Pare. Moshe says to Hashem, what are you talking about? Sell it to Pare. If the Bnei Yisrael didn't listen to me, Eich Yishmeini Pare. Why is Pare going to listen to me? Real sofa sight. So Rashi says this is one of the greatest Kal Vachomers in the world. If the Jewish people didn't listen, definitely Pari is not going to listen. So everyone asks, what type of Kal Vachomer is that? The reason why the Jewish people didn't listen was because Mikaytzer Ruach HaMevayda Kasha. They didn't listen because they had so many other reasons not to listen. Pari had no reason not to listen. He's got a comfortable situation. Why wouldn't he listen? So the Chizkuni says, Moshe Rabbeinu had no idea why the Jewish people didn't listen to him. He was convinced they didn't listen to him because of his speech impediment. He thought it was because he wasn't a good orator. He didn't know it's because Mekaytzer Ruach. The Torah says that. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know that. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, one second. If my speaking abilities are not good enough for the Jewish people, if I can't get a job with the Jews, I'm not going to get a job for Pari. If I can't sell it to the Jewish people, I'm just not good at what I do. I got to go back to being a shepherd. He had never thought for a second, says the Chizkuni, that it was because he was Mekaytzer Ruach Mevoy Dekosh. He just thought he didn't have a Kayach Adipo. Reb Schwab adds to this. He says, I'll prove it to you. Why didn't Shevet Levi join Moshe Rabbeinu? If the whole reason the Jewish people didn't join is because they were so beaten down, Shevet Levi wasn't beaten down. They were sitting in yeshiva all day. Why didn't they join Moshe Rabbeinu's banner? So Moshe Rabbeinu figured it must be, I don't speak well. I don't give over the message properly. So that's why no one's joining me. So if no one's joining me in my own community, I'm not getting too far with Pari. Therefore he said, why should I bother going to Pari? Pari's not going to listen to me anyways. He doesn't answer the question. It's a shtaka guy. He never thought of it till now. Why Taka didn't Shevet Levi ever join him? Very interesting. And that's where the Torah ends. So Rashi here learned a new different speech impediment. Means his lips were sealed. It sounds like, again, I'm not exactly sure what the issue over here was. It sounds like his lips were somewhat sealed that he couldn't speak out. While in Sefer Shmois, we heard he was a chvat peh, which Rashi over there quotes a French word, which means he stuttered. So Moshe Rabbeinu seemed like he had a whole lot of speech issues. He could have used a speech therapist to be able to speak clearer or better. But again, Aros Vasayim sounds like his lips were sealed. I'm not really sure what you can do with that. But stuttering, there are ways of treating it. It's very interesting. I find it very fascinating, the whole idea of stuttering, that it's could be very psychological. But in any case, Moshe Rabbeinu, according to Rashi and Parsha Shmois, had that problem. So what happens next? So where does the story go from here? Right, so we stop right here. The story is very exciting. Moshe Rabbeinu gets rejected by Pari. He doesn't want to hear from him. The Jewish people reject him. He doesn't want to go to Pari. All of a sudden, we take a break. We start talking about the Yichus. Middle of nowhere. We start talking about Yaakov had Reuven, and he had Shimon, and he had Levi, and Levi had Amram, and Amram. What does that have to do with anything? What's for our Shaychus? We're in the middle of this very, very intense storyline over here, figuring out. All of a sudden, we take a break to discuss where everyone came from. So the Pasuk tells us something very interesting about Moshe Rabbeinu's parents. Pasuk tells us who they are. Rabbi Frank quotes the name of Moshe Feinstein. This is the first time we know who Moshe and Aaron's parents were. In Parashat Shmos, he never tells us who they were. Why only now? So he says over in the name of Moshe. Moshe said, because in Parashat Shmos, we heard about this baby Moshe. We knew he was going to be big. He had potential. But we didn't yet know how that was going to turn out. So we're not going to mention his parents' name. We're not going to give him the credit. Just because you have a genius child, but if you don't raise him, that his potential is completely used, you don't get the credit. When we get to Parshas Ve'era, now we see who Moshe Rabbeinu is. Now, says Rav Moshe, now we can give credit to the parents. You, Amram, you, Yocheved, you had this unbelievable child, and you took his talents and you used them. You didn't waste them. You took that potential that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you, and you used it. That's why this is the first time we see Moshe Rabbeinu's parents mentioned. That's the way Rav Moshe explained. They must have instilled enough that they got, again, Moshe Rabbeinu was very small, right? 3 months, he was already out.
But it's interesting, if you look at the pasuk tells us who was Amram. He takes his aunt as a wife, and they have Aaron and Moshe. Now we know, we spoke about this a few weeks ago, that that's prohibited. One is not allowed to marry their aunt. And there's a kasha. How was Amram allowed to do it? That's one of the kashas. And the Torah, you think of the Torah didn't need to make it so obvious. He kind of could have kept it a secret. No one else did they tell you who they're related to. Why does it go out of its way to tell us where he came from? Why does the Torah go out of its way to tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu came from an illicit relationship? Says the Chizkuni, it's because Moshe Rabbeinu carried this his entire life. When he was leaving Klal Yisrael, he knew in the back of his head, I can't be act like I'm greater than you. Look where I come from. My parents were in an illicit relationship. I'm not going to prav and act that I'm better than you. Says the Chizkuni, to be a good leader, you have to remember where you come from. Don't be so quick to say, oh, I'm better than you. Moshe Rabbeinu carried every day of his life, he knew this. And therefore he knew I'm not going to be or feel or act or conduct myself better than you, because he knew that there was somewhat of an issue with where his parents came from. And therefore says the Chizkuni, that's why the Torah is telling us this, because Moshe Rabbeinu realized this. Him and Aaron both lived this every day of their life, and that's why they conducted themselves the way they did. And then ultimately we finally get to the Makos. We could talk a lot about the Makos, but I have to mention the famous word from Chaim Shmulevitz in Sichas Musar. I've mentioned this many times in other shurim. Rashi tells us in this week's parasha that Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't perform the first three Makos because the river protected him. Al Sakaris Atoy. So Chaim Shmulevitz asks the obvious question. Do you think the ground would have been insulted if Moshe Rabbeinu would have hit it? You think the water would have cried? Would the ground been hurt emotionally? What's that Hakaras HaTov over here? I understand, we're talking about two human beings. We talk about Hakaras HaTov. What does it mean Hakaras HaTov when you're talking about an object that has no feelings? It says Chaim Shmulevitz, it's because we don't understand what Hakaras HaTov really means. Hakaras HaTov is a very, very deep and important feeling that we're supposed to have. It's not always about the other person. It's about us. If someone does something nice for me, it's not about whether or not he needs it or doesn't need my thank you. I should feel that because something nice was done to me, I have to behave differently. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't come to hit the ground, not because the ground would be insulted, because he felt that the ground is something I owe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I can't behave that way. Says Chaim Shmulevitz, it goes even further. Yisrael, the pasuk tells that when Moshe Rabbeinu came, he asked Yisrael permission to leave. Says Chaim Shmulevitz, you have to ask Yisrael permission. HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chvayro ba'atzmai told you to go to Mitzrayim. You need to ask Yisrael permission? Says Chaim Shmulevitz, yes. Moshe had a lot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Yisrael. Yisrael took him in. Yisrael gave him a family, gave him a wife, gave him a job. Although one could have argued Moshe gave Yisrael much more. He gave him a son like Moshe Rabbeinu. But says, Chaim Shmulevitz, it doesn't matter. HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that if someone does something nice to me, I feel motivated to give back to that person. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. And he says it goes even further. Reuven. The pasuk says Reuven was motivated to save Yosef from the bar. Why? Says the Medrash, because in Yosef's dreams, he put Reuven together with all the other brothers, even though Reuven had the whole story about moving the beds. But in Yosef's subconscious dream, he put Reuven together with the other brothers. Says the Medrash, Reuven felt Akar's type to go out and help his brother. Says Chaim Shmulevitz, you see Ad Heichem Magia, how far does it go? This idea of Akar's type. From the fact, it's not always about what the other person is going to think. It has to be that you feel that this is right. I'll tell you a story that happened to me 3 hours ago. Someone called me up 3 hours ago when I finished preparing the share, and he tells me, we need you for a minion at 6 o'clock in the morning in the neighborhood. So I told my wife, I said, there's no way I'm going at 6 o'clock in the morning to this minion. I think they daven before Mishiyakim anyways. I think it's a Shaila. And I said, there's no way. I have all the reasons not to go. And I said to myself, I'm such a big talker over here. This fellow who asked me to come happened to have done a lot of nice things for me. Now, I could have justified not going, and I could have come up with all the terrors, and the guy probably would have understood. But I said, well, how can I justify it? We just quoted from Chaim Shmulevitz, who said, my HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you should feel. So I told the guy, yeah, I'll be there at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. I told him, I'll try. You know, we'll see what happens. You know, I'll try. I'm not bound by anything. But this is the idea, says Chaim Shmulevitz, we should feel it on our own, not because this person will be upset and not upset. He'll feel it, he won't feel. It should be self-motivated. Says Chaim Shmulevitz, that's the lesson to why Moshe Rabbeinu could not perform the first three makos and had to come, but Bedafka through Aaron. Okay.